We'll just keep talking. Can you still hear us? Can you still hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. I was just adjusting the volume.
Yeah, try to turn it down just another smidge lower, because
smidge. Is that a technical term?
It's a level.
Just a scotch.
Gotcha.
This episode of Bourbon Pursuit is made possible through listeners like you, supported through Patreon, and with partnerships brought to you by the following. Sterling Cut Glass is the official whiskey and tasting glass supplier to distilleries across the country and is also the official glassware of Bourbon Pursuit. They are offering free etched samples to whiskey societies nationwide. Simply email spirits@sterlingcutglass.com, include your logo, and mention Bourbon Pursuit. Take a look at their online catalog with Glencairns, Copitas, rock glasses, decanters, and more at bourbonpursuit.com and click on the banner for Sterling Cut Glass. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. And before we go on with the show, we are just going to go through a little bit of news. Now, we all love and know about the secondary market. We've talked about it on the show hundreds of times. But as a warning, you should know better that you need to be cautious of anything you do outside of retail. Someone on the biggest secondary market board willfully and willingly conned people out of money for bottles that he didn't own. He admitted that he was stealing people's money because, in his words, he was a 23-year-old guy that stumbled across the secondary market for bourbon and saw dollar signs. But thankfully, the community was able to stop this before it hit it epic levels, because he was only scamming people for a few dollars, and those were actually on Weller Antique 107s. For anybody that works in the industry and is looking to reach a wider audience that also loves to drink bourbon, please send us an email, team@bourbonpursuit.com, for partnership opportunities we have brewing. Today, we are actually out picking a barrel of Elijah Craig at Heaven Hill. Thanks to our partnership with Keg & Bottle out of San Diego for making this happen. Keg & Bottle is becoming an online powerhouse, and you can get any kind of spirits shipped to your front door. Go check out Keg & Bottle, K-E-G, the letter N, bottle.com, to check out their huge online inventory. Now, bottles from this barrel will be available to Patreon supporters here in a few months. So if you're interested in getting first access to these bottles or joining us on a potential barrel pick in the future, go ahead, support the show on Patreon. The main Patreon page has been updated with all the information you need. So if you have any questions, please just go ahead and send me an email. In today's show, we feature Dixon Dedman. Dixon actually had been a guest previously on the show on episode 27, so it was a long time ago. But he's done an immense job at resurrecting his family's brand. He's been secretly sourcing barrels, because most of us have no idea where it's coming from, finishing them in new charred oak barrels. He's charging a hefty premium on top of it, but he's really built and created a cult following around it. This was recorded a few months ago, so there's a lot of talk about Rye Batch 2 that was coming out, as well as the up-and-coming Batch 8 bourbon that we'll be seeing here in the fall time frame. But the rye now is just starting to hit U.S. markets across the country. We get into some interesting talk about the possible Kentucky Owl theme park, which is always going to continue being a running joke. As always, make sure you're subscribing to us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. If you're watching the podcast, make sure you're a subscriber on YouTube, or you can like us on Facebook to get all new posts. If you want to get the full show notes with links and everything that you can actually have at your disposal, visit bourbonpursuit.com and sign up for our email list, and those will be coming to your inbox 7 a.m. every new release. And of course, social media is where we post almost every day. So if you want to keep up to snuff on what we're doing, what we're drinking, where we're going to be at, go to Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook and follow us at Bourbon Pursuit. And lastly, Patreon is where we have limited edition t-shirts. We've got bottle tote bags that you can take to parties. We've got iron-on patches that you can put on hats or bags, and all kinds of cool stuff, including, as I mentioned before, access to barrel picks. And there's a lot more cool things coming, so make sure you go check it out, patreon.com, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. And with that, Enjoy this week's episode, and here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. When I was in college, I gripped Jim Beam and kicked it back on the Oklahoma State Delta Chi balcony. I did that once, twice, and a few more. Looking back, I never really liked the other crap people were shooting, such as Jägermeister or cheap tequila. I always loved shooting bourbon. I also regret drinking like that. As I grew older with a better income, I no longer felt the need to kick whiskey back, and my desire to party immensely dropped. Of course, I also liked waking up without the need to visit a liver repair surgeon or feel my brain splattered on the bedside table. I'll just say it, party drinking sucks the next day. In the medical field, they call it binge drinking, and it's terrible for you. The British Medical Journal recently reported binge drinking is killing a lot of young Americans, with cirrhosis increasing by 65% from 1999 to 2016. I personally lost a friend to this disease who drank straight from the bottle in his 30s as he did in his early 20s. He was 37 with two kids when liver disease took his life. And in the bar world, we've lost many talented mixologists who partied all night and went to work without sleep the next day. They've died in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, all way too young. It's sad, and yes, I want you to celebrate bourbon, to feel its caramel-rich notes caressing your palate, but I also hope you do so responsibly. Don't drink and drive. Know your limits and realize that you can drink too much, and that will damage you. Of course, this can sound and feel like a bit of a downer on a bourbon show. But currently, health organizations are rallying against distilled spirits in a similar fashion to the temperance Nazis prior to Prohibition. In Ireland, they're pushing to put cancer warning labels on whiskey, and new alcohol advertising bans are creeping up everywhere. We can never forget that people want to regulate what consumers take in, be it cigarettes, alcohol, or a Big Mac. They think they know what's best for you. And that also means higher taxes. After Congress passed the tax cut on spirits last year, the Washington Post asked how many people will die from it. So now you have a new reason to drink responsibly. Bourbon consumers are the world's best example that you don't have to drink every day to enjoy your passion. We like to take our bourbon neat or on the rocks, sit with friends, and just sip. And that's this week's Above the Char. Check me out on Twitter and Instagram at Fred Minnick. That's at FredMinnick. And you can find my bourbon books wherever books are sold. Until next week, cheers.
Welcome back to the episode of the Bourbon Pursuit Podcast, the official podcast of bourbon. We are here in our official recording studios, live in my dining room, which we've gotten to know pretty well over the past few weeks and past few episodes, right?
Yeah, we know exactly what time the FedEx man's coming, the UPS man, the mails, you know, so it's fun. I love this little studio.
It's not too bad. You know, I think we're getting it figured out little by little here. You know, I've got, you know, nobody can really see it, but the dog is sitting there looking out the window, just waiting. So I can't, there might be some post editing cuts that'll have to happen. But, you know, I think as we focus on this actual episode, this is one that, you know, we had this guest on a long time ago. It was back on episode 27. So we are 150 plus away from the last time we had him on. And that means it was back in the early days, right? And you're saying we used to really suck back then. That's probably true.
It's funny when you like, because we're now just starting to revisit these guests we had on early in the show. And like, you think back what was going on in that time. And the first time we interviewed Dixon, I think I was talking to you all about being in a parking lot, Urban Outfitters, shopping with my wife. And like, we had no clue what we were doing. We faked it till we made it. So it's, I'm excited to, you know, hopefully do this a better round two. So,
well, I mean, so for anybody that has never heard anything about Kentucky Owl, I'm sure you have by now because of just how well it's just gone and taken over in different markets and made a splash, you know, but like I said, it was back on episode 27. So make sure you do yourself a service and go and listen to it, because we're not going to talk all about the history of Val. We might touch on a little bit to give a little refresher, but not as in depth as we did that last time. But
yeah,
that's a good segue into introducing our guest today. So today we have Dixon Dedman of Kentucky Owl. He has had many titles. We were trying to figure out
the
what man,
the myth, the legend.
Yeah. I mean, he said he's been everything from brand ambassador to master blender, maybe CEO. I don't know.
President, like, we'll just, account manager, accounts receivable,
finance manager. Yeah. Pretty much just a mixed bag. So Dixon, welcome back, buddy.
Man, thank you. Thank you. As you're talking about that, I'm trying to remember where I was or where we did this interview, and I'm not even sure I can recall.
Yeah, when I was even trying to set up this recording, I sent you a message, and I was like, "Hey, should I still send you to like Dixon at your bed and breakfast email address?" Because I figured by now you'd be like all like at Kentucky Owl or at Stoli or something like that.
No, I have the at Kentucky Owl email address. You can send to either one. It exists, but you know, it's funny because with all that has happened since we last, you know, talked. I mean, my day to day life, my real life. I mean, I'm here. I'm in my office at the inn. You know, we're serving lunch at about 11:30 today, and I'll go. You know, so. I think everybody thinks that all this, you know, crazy changes have, and it has, there have been a lot of changes, but, you know, I still have the inn. That's still my everyday passion and what I do. You know, so as much as has changed since the last time we talked, I think a lot probably hasn't, which is kind of funny. Cause you talk to people a lot and they just feel like, you know, I must be some new person or doing some new stuff. And the reality is there's probably a good chance that I'm going to bust some tables here in about an hour and a half and wash some dishes and fry some chicken. And you know, it's all good.
I mean, are you getting to the point of burnout a little bit? I mean, how are you able to kind of, and by the way, I guess give people an idea that what you do as well as Kentucky Owl, because just to give a little bit of refresher of what right. The inn is.
Yeah, so you know, my day job, you know, I own and operate the Beaumont Inn here in Harrodsburg. It's been in my family. We're in our 99th year, so next year we celebrate 100 years. I'm the fifth generation of my family. We've got 31 guest rooms and 3 restaurants and about 40 acres here, kind of right in central Kentucky, about 30 miles south of Lexington. So right, kind of in the heart of bourbon country. We're 20 minutes south of Four Roses, 25 minutes south of Wild Turkey, if that gives the bourbon community an idea.
they're looking at Google Maps right now, trying to figure all that out.
it's the Greenbrier of, you know, the bourbon trail, right?
I couldn't have said it better.
Nice. Perfect.
So I back to my original question, like, how are you not feeling any sort of burnout by handling both the bed and breakfast at the Beaumont Inn as well as, or not bed and breakfast, but you're right. You know, doing thing at the Beaumont Inn as well as the Kentucky Owl thing?
The thing about both the Inn and Kentucky Owl that, you know, make it, so that you don't, you know, I am very fortunate. I am very blessed to be able to do what I love to do. And I'm very blessed to be able to continue traditions and to promote things that mean a lot to my family. There's a great sense of pride in carrying on the tradition of the inn, as well as, you know, of promoting this brand in Kentucky Owl that you know, dates well over 100 years with my family. So I think with anything, there's obviously you get, you know, tired of you know, there's some bit of you know, the grind, but at the end of the day, you know, I feel very blessed and have a great opportunity to do, you know, something that I love. You know, I'm excited every day about what opportunities and what challenges I have. And, you know,
So how much time were you putting into Kentucky Owl? And because, I mean, we follow along with you on Facebook and Instagram and everything like that. And you, I know you're traveling a lot for it. You're also sitting there testing out new blends, it seems like, every other week. So how much time is actually going into it?
Honestly, a lot more than I thought. And it's, you know, last year was a little bit of a challenge to juggle some of that. You know, I will never let Kentucky Owl get in the way of what we're trying to do and what I'm trying to do here at the Inn. I've been able to lean on some very important people to me here at the Inn to cover some of the things that, that I need to do so that I can, devote, you know, a little more time to travel and things like that. But you know, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge. And it's a fun challenge, you know, but there's a lot of times where, I mean, just 2 weeks ago, I did, the payroll for Beaumont Inn on an airplane on my way to do an event in New York. So, you know, you just kind of have to adjust on the fly sometimes.
Yeah, technology makes that a lot easier. It does help. But it's hard to shut it off, too. You talk about, you know, there's not many changes, but obviously there has been changes. For people that don't know, what has changed with Kentucky Owl, you know, in the past year or two?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kentucky Owl, we got to a really amazing spot where we're doing Kentucky only releases. And then, you know, I'm seeing bottles, on bar shelves in Chicago and New York and San Francisco, you know, and we really, the need or the opportunity to grow this brand outside Kentucky was there, but for, Mark and Sherry and I, you know, the challenge of negotiating with all these individual states, it just became too broad. And so I partnered with the Stoli Group to essentially use their marketing and distribution channels to take the brand outside the state of Kentucky. And so, you know, that moved a little bit quicker than I thought it was going to, in the fact that we were able to do some of the things that I wanted to do over the next 3 or 4 years, i.e. the rye in a shorter amount of time and things like that, which led to more markets, which, you know, was, and quite honestly, you know, I have the opportunity to say, no, I don't want to go to that market, or no, I don't want to do that event, or no, I don't want to go, but it is still every bit of me. It is my, you know, nobody touches the product except for me. Nobody does the blend except for me. Nobody puts it up. So, and it's my story, and it's our creation. And so I want to be the one to tell the story. I want to be the one to travel. I want to be the one to see the people and to shake their hand and thank them for being a consumer, and thank them for, you know, helping us get where we're going. So, that's really where the, you know, a lot of that comes from, I guess.
So what was the process like? Were you, like you said, you reached that point, were you looking for outside and help or investors, or were you being sought out, and why did you ultimately choose Stoli over others, if there was others?
So I guess there's both those. I mean, you know, we knew that we needed outside, we needed something else, but they approached us. And they weren't the only ones who had approached us. The reality is that, I want to be a part of it. And the reality is that they said, let us help you achieve, your goals. Let us help you get where you want to go, but you still make all the decisions, call all the shots, and are still the face of the brand. And they have been so true to their word on that. You know, it's still, the blend will be what, it will be based on what I put together. And I'm not putting anything that I don't believe in a bottle. I'm not putting anything that I don't think is the single best combination of barrels I can put together. And I don't have, they've never given any direction other than you just continue to do what you've been doing. So,
and you're the first bourbon to be in Stoli's portfolio. Do you think when they did that, they were really trying to give up a little bit more to kind of start branching out into that as well? Because you might not be the last two.
Well, the reality is that they have been branching out for quite some time now. The Stoli group has a rum facility in Louisiana, Bayou Rum. They've got a couple wineries. There's a tequila under that umbrella now. So that group has been diversifying for a while. And of course, they wanted to get in the bourbon game. They had been trying at different places. And so, it's a very aggressive company, as you can tell by what they plan to build in Bardstown.
Talk about that.
a lot of people want to talk about that. But the reality is, that is an ultra premium company with ultra premium goals and ambitions. And so we fit well with them, not to become some mass marketed. They like luxury, and they wanted to essentially, they just really came and offered to help us get and achieve, our long-term goals. And it's been a really amazing partnership so far.
So what were your, when you first started this company, what were your long-term visions? Like, did you have any idea this is where you'd want to be or?
No,
or?
None at all. I mean, I act like I keep saying we had these long, and the goal was always
sell a few bottles to maybe pay for a trip to Florida. Right.
Right.
Who
knows? Right. I mean, I had no idea that we'd be here, that we'd be doing this. None. But as I think, as we continued to release product and people really started to believe in, what we're doing, what we're saying, and believe in the fact that, in kind of our philosophy, you just want to take it to a broader market than just Kentucky. And that was really what, the challenge that we were facing.
I mean, did you see yourself possibly going into saying, I want to do Kentucky Owl full time?
No. I mean, I full time, sometimes I feel like it is full time.
It's already full time.
I think I have two full time obligations as it is. But, there's something very special to me every day about walking into the inn, about carrying on this tradition, about being the fifth generation of my family to do this. I'll never walk away from this.
You kind of look at it as maybe the Kentucky Owl brand can kind of go and take a life of its own one day, but this is still going to be your thing that you're going to end up getting old and gray and still be hanging out back at Beaumont, right?
But I think Beaumont and Kentucky Owl are making me old and grayer faster than I would like, but I have every intention of staying with Kentucky Owl as long as that project continues. Again, it's just kind of figuring out, how you
how you balance it, everything. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some of the blends and the batches and everything like that. When you're figuring this out, and you've been expanded past Kentucky for a while now, what's the ultimate goal in how you can take something and scale it? Because if you're going to sit there and say like, okay, I can release 1500 bottles, and now it's like, okay, we got to get to like 3000 or 5000, like whatever that magic number is.
The reality is, like, now, I have so much, like, so much more, as if it's, compared to others, it's nothing. But, we started this project however many years ago, and we're both putting down new fills as well as, you know, acquiring liquid, rebar. So every time it comes to create a new batch, every year I have more available, you know, to work with. When you think about batch one, I mean, it was a 5-barrel blend and I had 6 barrels to work with, you know. I have a lot more liquid at my, you know, at my disposal at this point. So, you know, the batches can become a little bit bigger. Will they ever be 50,000 barrel blends? Absolutely not. You know, this is always going to be very hands-on, very craft, very small, very boutique. But, you know, I have the luxury of a little more liquid available right now. And so it makes my job a little harder. You know, I'm enjoying, you know, kind of putting together and playing with this and seeing where these barrels, you know, I look at this barrel and the notes on it from last year and where it is this year and the way it's changed. And you know, and it's just, it's corny and cliche. It's a total labor of love. But, you know, to your point about burnout, like sometimes I'm just like, I cannot go and taste through this. I just can't.
Not today.
Well, I mean, another aspect of that too is, you know, we've talked to other blenders on here and they say pretty much the hardest part to do is do something consistent. It's actually pretty easy to get a, you know, 9 to 10 barrels and create some new blend that has subtle differences than the last time. You know, is that your goal to kind of have these nuances where you create stuff and that is a numbered batch and then it's a limited release and then it's kind of like, you know, collecting baseball cards at this point. You want to have,
I think maybe that's the luxury that I have, is that, you know, admittedly, every batch is going to be different. Batch one is, you know, two is different from one and did not follow the same profile. And you know, six was completely different from seven and, you know, they're all unique. They all, and so, you know, I don't sit down to try to recreate anything. I sit down with, the barrels I have available to me, and then figure out what best direction that I believe this blend should go in. And then I put it together. And it's not about replicating a previous batch or a profile. I don't sit down with an idea in mind of what this one's going to taste like. I look at the barrels, kind of take an inventory of the profiles that I have available. And then, you know, we start down the path to see where it ends up. It's always kind of fun. It's certainly a challenge. I love to get input. I actually was in Chicago a couple of weeks ago and we did an event at a place called Longman and Eagle. I don't know if y'all have been there.
Oh yeah. It's a great place.
I took a sample of one of the blends that could potentially become number eight and let the whole group sample it and see what they thought about it and stuff. You know, it's we did number two, then number six, and then this test blend, and they're all three completely different bourbons.
So to kind of kickstart that back, I also want to give people a refresher because you do something that's a little bit unique where you are rebarreling a lot of these. You know, you kind of dump it, then rebarrel it, age it for a little bit longer, and then bottle it. Is that still true?
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, you know, I used to kind of stumble over this, you know, explanation. And I think the fact that I have given my song a dance a number of times, but like the best example that I can give with kind of the philosophy that we started with was to essentially create an inventory of barrels with unique flavor profiles, based on different ages, different locations and different rick houses, but also we would rebarrel liquid into barrels with different char levels and place them in different. And so the idea was to create this inventory of barrels with all these different flavor profiles and then sit down and blend them together to create, you know, again, a combination of unique barrels to complement each other into one, you know, into the best thing that we could develop. And that's really, I think maybe, you know, it's a moving target, but that's really been the you know, the program that we've stuck with, and I think, you know, one that's a little bit unique to Kentucky Owl versus what some of the other people are doing.
And you're putting them into new charred oak barrels, so Silk is able to hold that Kentucky Straight label on it. So what's the age that you're, if you can divulge, like how long are you putting it in those extra barrels, and then are you seeing any sort of loss that's coming from the Angel share or whatever, right?
Oh, I mean, sure.
Is it pretty minimal?
So I've got 10-year-old barrels that were, the liquid was 2 years old when I put it into new oak, and some that were six and they've been in there a year, and it's just, you know, you just kind of watch them and play with them. And yeah, I mean, you know, there are times when you go back and check this barrel and it's like, where did all that go? You know, we've had, I mean, just like with any, you know, I had a barrel that I found, about this time last year that, you know, that was almost a total loss. That was, you know, one that I was kind of putting away that I was really excited about. It was a weeded barrel that we had double barreled that was going to be, you know, and then, you know, you go look at it. It's like, oh,
those damn leaky barrels.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's the nature of the beast, I guess. But.
Absolutely. So how often are you putting out new batches? Like what's your time frame on doing a lot of these? Is it saying we'll do once a quarter to a year?
No.
Whenever Dixon doesn't feel like it for now.
Yeah.
Like, with the bourbon, you know, the target is always, you know, that fall release of every year, one a year. We've really, the only time I've released something outside of that were the three single barrels we did in December of 2015, which was kind of a one-off thing. But other than that, you know, I mean, I'm working on batch 8 right now, but the target release for that is September, you know, October. The rye, we're doing twice a year. So there will be probably a late spring release of the rye. And then targeting another kind of fall, late fall, early winter release.
So before we jump on the rye bandwagon, I want to kind of talk a little bit about batch 8. So
yeah.
What do you think you're doing a little bit differently with batch 8 that you did with, say, batch 7?
This episode of Bourbon Pursuit is made possible through listeners like you, supported through Patreon, and with partnerships brought to you by the following. Sterling Cut Glass is the official whiskey and tasting glass supplier to distilleries across the country and is also the official glassware of Bourbon Pursuit. Sterling has contracted with the finest European crystal factories to bring the best quality glassware into their Kentucky warehouse and production facility. If you've been following us on social media, you'll see how their deep etch glassware is truly the best in the industry. I know because I searched up and down the internet to find out who was the best. Come to find out, Sterling Cut Glass supplies almost all the distilleries on the Bourbon Trail, and they're also the official glassware of the PGA Tournament and the Kentucky Derby. Make your logo shine on Capita Nosing Glasses, Glencairns, Neat Tasters, Rocks, Tumblers, and more. They're offering free etched samples to whiskey societies nationwide. Simply email spirits@sterlingcutglass.com, include your logo, and mention Bourbon Pursuit. Take a look at their online catalog by going to bourbonpursuit.com and clicking on the banner for Sterling Cut Glass. What do you think you're doing a little bit differently with batch 8 that you did with, say, batch 7? Because, you know, we were kind enough to get some sample bottles thrown our way. And and we'll tell you a funny story after this if you ever caught it too. But go ahead.
What's interesting about batch 8 is this is the first time that I am looking at three or more different distillates going into the same, into this batch. You know, usually in the past, it's been a combination of two different, but right now I've got three and potentially four different distillates that have all been rebarreled and you know, that are kind of making their way into this blend. So it's, Again, I have so much more at my disposal as this stuff it comes of age, and the reality is that for me and in my experience in doing this, I'm not one of those. If it's not 15 years old, I think when it's right, it's right. And, I've got 6-year old stuff that we rebarreled at 3 that is so complex and so full of flavor and so intense and it's ready and I want to use it. And, I don't feel like you got to sit there and say, oh, well, if it's not, cause I quite honestly, I think you put it in a sample bottle, you send it to somebody and say, taste this. And they're going to say, that is amazing. What is it? If you tell them beforehand, oh, this is, 6-year old, they're going to be like, oh, it's only 6 years old. The reality is,
get the snobs that are coming out. Right.
Yeah. Right.
The kiddies and,
So, I guess, I don't know if you were watching or paying attention to last year, we actually had a blind sampling roundtable that we did.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was when you had sent us the batch 7 samples and we had tried it. I think I did like a live review on Facebook. I was like, yeah, it's actually pretty good. I was like, it might be tough to find. The price is a little high, which, you're aware of that. And then we had a blind sampling roundtable where somebody from the fan of the show, they sent us blind samples. And we all went through, and it was like the last sample, I think. And we were all like, wow, like, what is this? This is really good. Like, he's got,
I was like, this has got to be a Willett.
Sitting there like, maybe it's some like good barrel proof, like something that we never had before. It might be a little old. And then coming to find out, like, it's batch 7 Kentucky. Yeah. Like, what we had just tasted like that week, we had no idea.
We had no idea. Yeah.
It was a funny story. It was Michael Urato. Yeah, you'd
send it. Yeah, Michael. Okay.
You basically sent him the bottle, and then he re-put it into sample bottles and sent it right back to us to mess with our heads.
Yeah,
it was pretty interesting.
Because I think Blake had just done a live review of batch 7 too, like the week before. So it was perfect timing. It was pretty funny.
Yeah, I was getting texts from him cracking up. I think maybe even while he was watching it, like, you're never going to believe this. You're never going to believe this.
Yeah, probably. Well, we'll be looking for those batch 8s in the mail then.
That's right.
Yeah. I gotta get back to that.
Yeah. Well, whenever you get around, you got a FedEx person, probably they'll take care of it.
Yeah.
So I want to kind of touch on the rye a little bit, right? What was the idea of starting the rye release? Because, you were doing bourbon, very, very well for, 5 to 6 consecutive batches. And then you came out with the rye release. And not only that, it was massive. So what was the idea behind it?
I love rye whiskey. I have been fooling around with rye whiskey. I've got all kinds of cool things. I've got new make rye whiskey aging in used Kentucky Owl barrels. I have always wanted to, I've always wanted the, next iteration of Kentucky Owl to be a true Kentucky straight rye whiskey. So, this has been something that I've been planning and counting on for a while. And, it was really the first thing that I felt like not only was it ready, but, I could use that channel, that Stoli channel, to take it, further than just Kentucky and things like that. So, I was super excited to get the rye out there. It was a lot of fun to work with. It's the first thing I've ever done that I didn't release at barrel proof. I loved it at it was 132.4 at barrel proof, which, was amazing, but it also, I wanted the complexity, the structure, the backbone of a true rye whiskey. But I wanted to make it a little more approachable, because as you know, 130 something proof, rye whiskey is pretty intense. So we took it all the way down to 110.6, which is still, got a little, and I was really excited about it. It's another one of those things. I mean, I'm not putting anything out there I don't believe in. I'm not putting anything out there I'm not putting my name on. I'm not putting anything out there that that I don't stand behind. But I was floored with the reception. I think it was really, really well received, and I was very pleased with the response. And the reality is that I don't expect everybody to love everything that we do. I love going to different events, and people talk about how much they love batch two and they like, batch six is their favorite or whatever. The rye was one of those things. Again, I'm putting it out there because I believe in it, but I don't expect, I'm okay with people not liking it. And it's to be expected, but I was really floored by the response with the rye and very, thankful for all the people that tried it and enjoyed it and excited about getting the next one out there.
What's the process? Like you talk about it as 132 barrel proof, and then you decide to bring it down to 110. Why 110? And like, do you just keep adding water till you're like, oh, this is the perfect spot to stop, or we go far?
I kind of, I'm not an expert on any of this stuff. I'm just
neither are we.
Kind of flying.
But you slept at the Beaumont Inn last night, so therefore.
Well, yeah. Of course, yeah. So, yeah,
you can perform surgery as a Holiday Inn Express.
I'm sure that there are people who are a lot more talented and have done this a lot longer than I have that can tell you the right way to do it. I just know how I did it. And the first thing I did was I put this together and I found the combination of barrels that I thought were the best. And then basically I took it way down in proof to see what happened to it. And like I think happens with a lot of rye whiskeys, the structure, the complexity, the backbone just drops out of it. And they end up tasting like floor cleaner. Then it was about finding that sweet spot, finding that, and so what I would do is I would take it and I would put it at, about five or six different, spots to figure out where the right one, where it works. And typically, with anything, I don't, I'll get it set up. And then I walk away from it and I come back in a couple of days and then everything is done blind. So I had that rye at probably five different proof points, in glasses in front of me. I left the room. Somebody comes in, switches them all around. I come back, I go through it. I find, I choose the one that I think, is the best. Then I say, okay, now come back in and tell me which one that was or whatever, So, I mean, that's my really scientific process for doing that.
I love it. Yeah. It sounds right in my alley. Like
he doesn't have a white lab coat on it.
And a hydrometer.
He goes and he makes sure that the meatloaf isn't burning, and he comes back and he's making sure that batch one of Kentucky All Rye is ready to go. Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of times I come back and with a piece of chicken and a little corn pudding how does this taste next to good home cooking?
Yeah, nice.
So, I mean, when batch one released, I think this is where Stoli kind of put batch one of the rye. Is this where Stoli really cemented their help in this venture, because you're actually able to take this to a lot more markets? It was the biggest release that you've probably ever done.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. And not to bore you or whatever, but I don't think a lot of people understand kind of the way the whole thing works in that.
I definitely don't.
Yeah. So like if I'm a Kentucky only release, I dot the I's and cross the T's with whatever distributor I use in Kentucky. If I want to go to Indiana, I got to go and I got to set up a deal and jump through all the hoops with somebody in Indiana. If I want to go to Ohio, I got to do the same thing in Ohio. If I want to do the thing, that was really, where I our relationship was made life a lot easier. They've got distribution in all 50 states. So it just makes the pipeline is there, so to speak. We sat down and they said, where would you like to see this go? And we have partners in these states that are really excited about it. Are you good with that? I said, absolutely. It was a great opportunity to kind of expand the footprint of Kentucky Owl and the brand. We did actually, we released the batch number 7 in very small quantities to 6 additional markets outside Kentucky as well. So we moved some stuff, and are going to continue to kind of grow this, the footprint a little bit, but still on a very small scale.
Do you want the bourbon to become as big as the rye release?
No, I can't. It can't.
So
from a liquid standpoint, it can't.
like there's literally just not enough product. It just can't.
No. And that is funny because over the years, I turned down 70% of what was offered to me because I didn't believe in the quality of the liquid. I'm very specific and want, I don't want a sample from, let's say a 50 barrel lot. I want 25 cent. I want to know exactly because if I don't believe in it, I don't want to, I'm not going to use it. And so, just with bourbon, it's just the quantity is very limited. What I want to do with it is not to turn it into some, some big massive, thing. It's still going to be very, very, very small, very craft, very hands-on. And I think the rye, there's a misconception about, the rye went to a lot of markets, but not very much of it went to all those markets. So we were able to spread it around, but it's still not like it's some, 100,000 bottle release or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Good. You brought it up. So
I was about to ask that. Yeah.
People were trying to figure out exactly how many bottles were actually in the release because with the bourbon, you put the number of the bottle and everything like that. The rye didn't have it. So feel free to dispel about how many bottles were in the batch 1 of rye release.
Top secret information. It's absolutely top secret information.
Get some Russian hackers to find it.
What's that? That's right.
Get some hackers to find it.
There were, I don't know the number. There were a lot. Obviously, the last batch of bourbon I did was like 2,500 bottles. There were well over like 12,000 bottles of the rye. I don't know the exact number with the bourbon. I'm always there. We from the start of the bottling to the finish of the bottling, it was enough for this to be like a 3-day process. So they threw me out after a while.
When you look at the rye as just it's just another brand extension. It's a line extension. It kind of keeps the focus on Kentucky Owl a little bit longer if you can continually doing these releases. So it seems like with you put a lot more emphasis on the bourbon than the rye, or is it just something that is just another part of what this is?
I'm not sure I understand say that again.
Do you care about the rye as much as you care about the bourbon? I guess that's a better way to put it.
I will tell you with 100% certainty, as long as I am involved with Kentucky Owl and that brand, I will put nothing out that I don't stand behind 100% and put 100% of myself into it. Whether it's bourbon, whether it's rye, or whatever else. So
We're gonna get something.
Yeah, maybe we start making
corn whiskey, rum, you name it.
Well, yeah, I have no interest in doing moonshine or whatever. But
but American whiskey.
I guess the reality is I'm not,
especially with blending.
The rise is I gave the same attention and dedication. I have the same passion about the rye I have about the bourbon. I'm not, you know, and my name is, I mean, my actual physical name and signature on the back of the rye. I'm not putting that on there unless it's something I absolutely believe in 100%. And so, yeah, I mean, there's not going to be anything that I'm associated with or affiliated with that won't get 100% of my attention and full devotion.
Oh, cool. I think we could try to switch gears a little bit and take it to the theme park that you're building. So kind of talk about the investment in Stoli and what's going to be happening in Bardstown.
Well, there's no question that, I don't think that they understood how big a news that was going to be, to be quite honest. And, you know, the Stoli is an actively growing organization. As I mentioned, you know, the tequila, the facility in Lacassine, Louisiana, the wines, getting into this into the Scotch industry. And but they are committed to, you know, the bourbon industry and becoming a major player in this. Now, what does that mean for Kentucky Owl? Kentucky Owl will be a very, kind of the, as I, you know, the way they describe it is Kentucky Owl will be the crown jewel of, Stoli's, American whiskey and bourbon program. So, this park, for lack of a better term, is
whatever you want to call it.
Right. Is, you know, make no mistake. This is will be a state of the art, beautifully designed, you know, manufacturing facility for what I think will be some of the world's absolute best, Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey. And I will have a role in that. I'll have, my little corner, that I live in, but, they have much bigger ambitions for larger scale products and programs than just Kentucky Owl that will come out of this, this facility, if that makes sense.
So you could kind of compare it to being like the Willett family estate would be the Kentucky Owl, and then you have all these other brands under, you know, KBD or whatever.
That's very accurate. Right. So, and trying to figure out what role, or roles, we're all going to play, but this is a development that is starting to take shape, but it's not like it's going to be there tomorrow. So the reality is that for me, you know, I'm working on batch 8 and I'm working on batch 2 of the rye and I'm working on, our new fills programs and what the, what's coming up. Somebody else has the task of, making sure they're moving the dirt to the right spot. Right. Yeah. That's not, I'm staying out of that.
So why did
I got enough on my plate?
Why did you all choose Bardstown and not, you know, you said you got 40 acres there at the Beaumont Inn. Why not do it there?
Well, the reality is that this is, going to be as much of a work of art, as it is a production facility. This quarry, will turn into these five, lakes where, and this distillery will kind of sit in the middle of this. It was the right, size and opportunity, I think for them to create something that is going to be one of, if not the most spectacular bourbon destinations, mm-hmm. That Kentucky and the area has seen.
I mean, being from Bardstown, as people may know or not know, everyone is super excited about it. I mean, ever since it got announced, you know, it's one of the very missing parts of the Bourbon Trail.
I think also explain what's going to be there. You know, I've heard things from Ferris wheels to, you know,
roller coasters.
Yeah, everything. Right. So, like, what is the actual idea of what the essence of this place is really supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, and to be quite honest, I don't, you know, there's. They had to put something together, you know, on paper. What the reality is at the end of the day is still, you know, to be determined. I think some of the extraneous things got a little more attention than they should have because, number one, this is going to be, as I said, a state of the art, you know, beautifully designed, but this is the goal number one is to create, you know, a production facility for the brands that will come out of this facility. So, down the road there may, you know, I mean, there's talk of, a convention center type thing, boutique hotel, potentially that type of stuff. But the reality is that goal number one, two, and three are, production and being able to, you know, have a home for these brands and a place for people to come and see where, you know, we're making the stuff and tasting the stuff and blending the stuff. So, you know, as I said, a lot of the, I don't mean to call them extraneous, but the extraneous stuff got some attention. The reality is that, this is a distillery first and foremost, and, you know, whatever happens after that, for somebody else to decide. But
I mean, your expertise is in the blending side, and with the talk of the distillery going in, like, do you really want to have an involvement with there, or you'll just be on the back end and making sure?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a distiller. I have my opinions of, you know, and spend time with people who are, you know, or forget more in a half hour than I know in my life combined. So yeah, I mean, it's not as if I'm about to become, you know, we will hire a master distiller who will handle all of that. You know, I'm just going to continue to work with the barrels as they age, develop, you know, and do the blending. That's my role.
Sounds like a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, I might have like kind of a cool office or something like that.
Maybe little cubicle somewhere.
I was gonna say they should probably just put like a bronze statue somewhere, right?
At some point. I think it's more of like a broom closet with my name on it is what I'm kind of expecting.
I think you're underselling yourself there. I mean, what you've done with the brand and how it's grown, and you know, whether it was a lot of social media that really helped it, it was a lot of reviews that kind of helped it along. I mean,
well, and just having a good product.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken over in the short span of time, right? I mean, I'm sure that you had never imagined how fast and how quickly it grew in the span of 2015. So four years.
The timing wasn't bad either.
2014, September of 14. No, no idea. I had no idea. And I don't know how we did it. I don't really know. It's not like we had some plan. We laid out we did things the way that we thought we should do them. When you would get, you know, you'd see somebody, on social media saying, who are these people and what is this stuff? And you know, my response was always,
we're the wise man.
Well, no, my response is always send me your address. You know, I'll send you a sample. You make your decision based on that. You know, I love, you know, to, and I'm not talking about with Kentucky, I'm talking about in general. I just, you know, I love, the criticism that some things get when people don't even, you know, try them. They don't even, you know, give it a look or want to judge it based on, you know, something that I don't think has any effect on the liquid in the bottle. So try it, open it here. You know, you want to crush me, you crush me after you taste it. And so, you know, that's a lot of what we did. I mean, I sent a lot of samples out to people, you know, and said, this is it. This is what it is. It's fine if you don't like it. This is, you know, what I'm, what I'm standing behind and what I'm proud of. And you know, it's been kind of a crazy ride, but it's cool.
Seemed like it worked.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, while we're talking about samples, I think that's something we should also touch on is Dixon's infamous Instagrams of his samplings that always happen at the Beaumont Inn, right? So kind of talk about what you do with that when guests come in or you know, what's available and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that I kind of started doing several years ago was offering these tastings to, and it started with just, you know, our house guests, and it's grown to the point that now I've converted a space into an actual tasting room. I can fit 16 people around a table you know, you get people that come to Kentucky all the time. You all know this. They think that it's just going, you know, everywhere you go, there's going to be every amazing bourbon that's ever created available to you for, you know,
can be further from the truth.
You know, $5 a pop or something like that. So, you know, what I wanted to do was offer kind of a unique opportunity for people to come and taste some stuff that maybe they've heard of or not heard of, but don't have available to them. It's a great way to kind of interact with our guests or with people that are coming through, and you know, it's not a bad thing to sit down three or four times a week and drink bourbon with people. You know, it's something I think it's unique that we offer here at the Inn that you can't really get somewhere else. But you know, the chance to kind of sit down and taste through some stuff, and I usually just kind of ramble very, very similarly to what, you know, I do when I talk to you guys, you know, but it's open. It's not scripted. I don't, if I've done the tastings 500 times, I've never done the same lineup twice. It always changes. It's always just kind of what's available or what I feel like pouring that night or whatever. So.
And Kentucky Owl's sometimes not even a part of it. Usually when I see the pictures, it's usually never a part of it, right?
No, it's not. And you know, there's two reasons for that. One is because, you know, I don't even have a whole lot of the stuff. But two, my goal is to put, you know, different flavor profiles in front of people and talk them through how they achieve that or what the emphasis is there and the reality is that I want people to be very honest and you know, you pour some for somebody that's really sweet and really really mild next to something really, you know, spicy and full flavored and you know, the one person enjoys one and one person enjoys the other. But the reality is that, you know, you don't put the same thing in front of everybody and expect everybody to love it. You want to show them different characteristics, different nuances. And I want people to be honest. And when I put Kentucky Owl in there, you don't oftentimes get that honesty. Everybody wants to be like, oh yeah, I love it. This is it's the best thing ever. You know, and, I don't want that. You know, I want it to be, I want people to be honest and open about what they're, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I think, that'll probably wrap it up. You know, Dixon, I want to say thanks again for taking the time to talk to us today. You know, like I said, it's been 100+ episodes, mm-hmm. almost 140+ episodes since we had you on last time.
Two and a half years.
It's been a while. Now it's time to, it's good to get an update, and hopefully we won't have to wait 2.5 years until the next one.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, first of all, I mean, it's a testament to what you guys are doing. You know, I received several messages that said, oh, cool, I see you're going back on, you know, the Bourbon Pursuit. And so you guys are doing an amazing thing. You're doing amazing things for the industry. For, you know, little rednecks like me and Harrodsburg, I appreciate the opportunity.
I'm right there with you.
Thank you for all you've done to help, you know, Kentucky Owl and our brand and for the opportunity to come on and congratulations on all your success with 100+ episodes. That's
it's getting
serious.
But you know,
we appreciate the kind of words. Absolutely. But it's cool for us to see guys like you, you know, that had this dream and vision and see it like, you know, come to fruition and see it to come about. So it's very cool to see how, you know, it all come together. It's exciting for us because we're right here and we get to see it all up front.
No, you need to, you know, you're not too far from here. You come down, we'll work through batch number 8 together. So.
Hey, there we go. Put the Bourbon Pursuit sticker on there.
We can do that. That's what I was going to say. I was like, one of these days we're going to catch each other in person, because I was like, I know you've been here in Louisville doing things at the Bourbon Society. You've given some other talks here. And I was like, God, we always keep missing each other. Like, across
Kenny's got his own tasting room that we can I'd offer you mine, but Kenny's is way better.
One of these days.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, Dixon, so anybody that wants to get in contact with you, find out more about you, Kentucky Owl, Beaumont Inn, how do they do it?
I mean, there's obviously KentuckyOwl.com. There's BeaumontInn.com. I'm easy to find. I'm
the old owl.
The old owl on Instagram. Samuel Dixon Dedman on Facebook, or, you know, Dixon, Dixon at KentuckyOwlBourbon.com is my new fancy Kentucky Owl email address.
And he reads all of his fan mail.
That's right. He responds to every message
and his hate mail, but
as quickly as I can get to it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. So make sure you're following Dixon on social media. Make sure you're following us as well. So you can follow Bourbon Pursuit on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you like the show, you like what you're hearing, support the show, patreon.com, patreon.com/Bourbon Pursuit. It's also another one of these great perks that, as Dixon said, that, you know, people were sending messages to him saying, I'm glad you're back on Bourbon Pursuit. The only people that knew about it were people on Patreon. So it's really cool that we were able to make that happen. So it's you get the opportunity to sit here and join live, watch it while it's happening, be able to kind of see it as well before anybody else does.
Yeah, for sure. And we love hearing from our fans. So please keep sending us messages, emails. We love hearing from you, getting your show suggestions, your comments, your feedback. So please keep that up. That really helps us keep getting good ideas and keep bringing great content to you. So
let's work on our side.
That's right. We don't have to brainstorm. We just like, oh, they just tell us what to do and we go do it. So it makes it a lot easier. But anyways, we'll see you all next time.